Welcome to the Deep Dive. I am your host, and come on in, pull up a chair. We are really thrilled you're here with us today.
Absolutely. I'm your resident expert for today's deep dive, and we've got a fantastic topic.
We really do. And look, we know how it is, right? You're juggling a million things right now.
Oh, yeah.
You're commuting, you're working, you're just trying to keep up with life. You want to stay well-informed, and you want to grasp complex ideas quickly but thoroughly.
But you definitely do not want to be buried under some mountain of dry information.
Nope. No one wants that. You are looking for that genuine aha moment. Well, today we are serving up something that I really think is going to completely shift the way you look at your neighborhood, your workplace, and honestly, your own potential.
Yeah, it's a big one.
We are digging into community impact, personal transformation, and how everyday people can literally shift the atmosphere of the places they live.
It is a really bold premise, and the source material we are working with today provides a completely fascinating framework for it.
It really does.
We're diving into a document titled The Making of a City Changer.
Right.
And what stands out immediately, the very first thing, is how it completely upends the traditional concept of what it means to be part of a faith community.
Totally.
It pushes back hard against the idea that discipleship is just about, you know, information transfer.
Or behavior management.
Exactly. Or simply showing up to sit in a building for an hour a week.
Yeah. And that is the part that hooked me right away. The goal presented here isn't to create better rule followers. The goal is to raise what the document calls city changers.
Which is such a great term.
It is. Yeah. And these are described as people who literally represent heaven on earth and carry that reality directly into the cities where they live.
It sounds incredible.
It sounds amazing, but it also immediately brings up a huge logistical challenge.
Oh, for sure.
Like, how do everyday people, I mean, you, me, anyone listening to this on a Tuesday morning commute, how do we actually transform a city?
Right.
It sounds like a job for a superhero, not, you know, an accountant or a school teacher.
It does sound massive when you view it from that macro level, but the brilliance of this framework is how it deconstructs that intimidating goal into very personal, very internal shifts.
Yeah.
It presents a journey that is broken down into 9 key outcomes. Mm-hmm. And rather than starting with a megaphone on a street corner,
which nobody wants,
right, it starts completely internally, then it moves outward to how you view others, and then finally expands into how you view the entire world and your daily work.
Okay, let's unpack this, because 9 outcomes.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot to hold in your head at once.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
But if we take them step by step, it forms this really elegant progression. The journey begins with the inner foundation. That's identity, intimacy, and integrity.
Yep, those 3.
And the very first outcome is called being anchored, which is all about identity. There's this concept in the text that being anchored in Christ isn't just some poetic metaphor.
No, it's much more concrete.
It's an actual spiritual location. It means your life is not defined by your past mistakes, your current performance metrics, or your trauma.
What's fascinating here is the sharp contrast drawn between how a person operates based on their sense of identity.
Oh, this part was eye-opening.
Right. When your identity is unclear or insecure, your entire mission in life tends to become program-driven.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning you do things out of obligation, or to earn status, or just to keep up appearances in whatever system you belong to.
Checking the boxes.
Exactly, checking the boxes. But when your identity is genuinely secure, when you are anchored and truly believe those external factors don't define your worth, the mission becomes love-driven.
I hear that, and I love the sound of it, but it sounds a bit easier said than done.
Sure.
If I'm worried about paying my mortgage or I'm anxious about a massive project at work, how does a quote-unquote secure identity actually stop that real-world anxiety?
It's about stripping away the secondary weights we carry. When the mission becomes love-driven, shame loses its grip. Comparison loses its power.
Insecurity loses its voice.
Yes. Think about the energy you expend every single day just managing your image or comparing your progress to a peer's progress.
That's exhausting.
It is. If you walk into a high-stakes meeting and you completely lack the need to prove your inherent worth to the people in that room, your cognitive load drops dramatically.
Wow. Yeah, you aren't shaken by the pressure to conform because your core value is already secured in that spiritual location.
Precisely.
That makes a lot of sense. You bring a completely different energy to the room when you aren't actively trying to extract your self-worth from the people in it.
Exactly.
And that secure identity flows right into the second outcome, which is abiding.
Yes. Moving from identity to intimacy.
Right. Now, usually when people talk about spiritual intimacy or getting closer to God, it sounds exhausting.
It sounds like a lot of work.
It sounds like waking up at 4 a.m. to read by candlelight,
Correct.
right? But this framework shifts it from striving to awakening.
That is a crucial distinction. Abiding is not about working yourself into a frenzy to get God's attention. It is the realization that he has already drawn near, the distance is already closed.
Oh, I like that.
It's living with a deep interior awareness that the divine is present and active right now.
So how does that practically change the way someone operates? If I am abiding, how does that look different on a incredibly stressful Wednesday afternoon?
It fundamentally changes your posture, particularly in how you pray or seek help. You are no longer shouting up at the sky, trying to persuade heaven to care about your crisis.
Right, begging for an intervention.
Instead, you are participating in heaven's current activity. It destroys what is often called the one-day delay mentality.
The idea that one day things will be better.
For one day, God will finally show up and fix this mess.
So instead of sitting in terrible traffic, stressing out, gripping the steering wheel, and frantically praying to get out of it, you are sitting there realizing the divine is in the car with you.
Exactly. Or consider walking into a really chaotic family
We've
situation.
all been there.
Right. Abiding means you recognize the divine is at work in your family right now. When you operate from that mindset, you aren't just reacting to the chaos. You're grounded. You're operating from a place of deep internal communion. You are equipped to literally carry peace into that room rather than absorbing the room's anxiety.
That brings a profound sense of calm, just thinking about it. Which leads us to the third part of this inner foundation, being aligned.
Yes.
This is where identity and intimacy combine to create integrity. Now, when the word integrity gets tossed around in religious circles, it often carries a lot of baggage.
Oh, tons of baggage.
It can sound like rigid rule
It
following.
can sound like a moral straitjacket, but alignment here is defined as harmony between your private life and your public life.
Okay.
It's when your behavior matches your being, your conduct matches your confession.
Conduct matches confession.
Yes. This isn't about the moral pressure of adjusting to fit into a specific subculture or putting on a polite uniform on Sunday mornings. It is love responding to revelation.
Conduct matches confession.
That is a brilliant way to frame it.
Yeah.
Because we see so much fragmentation today.
So much.
People have their polished LinkedIn persona, then they have their really argumentative social media persona,
Yep.
and then who they actually are at home behind closed doors.
Completely different people.
But this framework insists that a city changer cannot live a fragmented life. And there's a very practical chain reaction for why this matters.
What's that?
Alignment creates credibility. Credibility creates influence. And influence is the essential ingredient for transforming a city.
It really is. You absolutely cannot change a city if nobody believes you are who you say you are.
Exactly.
If you want to influence your neighborhood, but you are known as the person who just screams at everyone during the HOA
Your
meetings,
confession means nothing.
right, your words are completely bankrupt.
So that covers the inner foundation: identity, intimacy, integrity. Now the framework shifts outward, moving from the self to how we view others.
Moving into compassion and calling. Yes. The fourth outcome is mercy. And this is all about seeing people through the lens of redemption. It relies heavily on the conviction that every single person is an image bearer. Let's pause there for a second, because image bearer is a theological term. For someone listening right now who might not use that phrase in their daily life, what does that actually imply?
To call someone an image bearer means you believe they were created in the image of the divine.
Okay.
It means they carry inherent, undeniable value, regardless of their behavior, their status, or their beliefs.
That's a powerful.
When you look at people through the lens of mercy, it completely rewires your reactions. You don't look at a skeptic as an annoyance. You see someone longing for truth.
Wow.
You don't look at an addicted person as a societal failure. You see a precious human being longing for restoration.
If we just applied that to the internet today, it would break the algorithm.
Completely.
The digital culture we live in thrives on contempt.
Yeah.
We are literally incentivized to find people who disagree with us and just dunk on them for likes.
It's true.
But to be a city changer, you have to actively refuse contempt. You have to refuse superiority.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see how mercy turns a mission from something mechanical into something incarnational.
Hold on. Incarnational is another one of those big seminary words. What does an incarnational mission look like on the ground?
So Mechanical Mission is treating people like projects.
Okay.
It's walking into a neighborhood with a clipboard, finding broken things, and trying to fix them from a safe distance.
That feels very sterile.
It is. Incarnational means embodying the spirit of love in human form. It means getting into the mess with people.
Have your hands dirty.
Yes, it's about proximity, inclusion, and welcoming every human into acceptance and healing without standing above them.
I really love that. You aren't fixing a project, you are sitting in the mess with a person.
Exactly.
And that natural empathy leads directly into the next phase, calling. This covers the fifth and sixth outcomes, mandated and mobilization.
Yes, and this might be one of the most paradigm-shifting parts of the entire document.
Why is that?
Because it completely rejects the sacred and secular divide.
It dismantles it entirely.
For centuries, there has been this subtle or sometimes very blatant hierarchy that says the real spiritual work is done by the clergy.
Right, the pastors, the priests, the missionaries.
And everyone else is just supposed to fund them and try to be nice at their regular jobs.
But this framework says no. Every single person is mandated.
Yeah.
You are called and empowered to carry kingdom life into ordinary spaces. You do not need a pulpit.
Exactly. The spirit empowers the accountant, the barista, the architect, and the nurse just as much as the vocational pastor.
That's incredible.
You don't wait for a platform to be handed to you. You are mandated right where you are.
And that concept of being mandated flows perfectly into mobilization. If I am called, how do I actually mobilize?
Through stewardship.
Right. The framework defines this by saying your unique wiring, your personality, your passions, even your past pain are all tools. It breaks stewardship down into three classic categories: time, talent, and treasure.
And shifting how we view those three things moves a person from being a mere consumer to an active contributor.
That's a huge shift.
It is, because we live in the ultimate consumer society. We consume content, fast fashion, food, and we often even treat community or faith like a product to be consumed.
Oh, absolutely.
We sit back and ask, what am I getting out of this?
So true. We say things like, did I like the music? Was the speaker entertaining today?
But a city changer flips that script. They look at their time as a mechanism for service. They look at their talent as a gift meant to serve others, not just a way to climb the corporate ladder.
Right.
And they look at their finances and resources as a tool for kingdom purpose. They ask, how have I been shaped? What has been entrusted to me?
It's intentional.
Yes. When you start deploying your design strategically, you stop living solely for yourself.
It makes you ask, where have I been placed? Which completely changes how you view your neighborhood or your office.
You aren't there by accident.
Right, you are deployed there. And that leads us to the final sweeping section of the journey, the broader impact. We've gone from the inner self to how we treat others, and now we look at worldview, work, and wholeness.
The big picture.
Exactly. Outcome number 7 is vantage. This is about adopting a kingdom worldview.
This is where the framework redefines some massive societal concepts. It argues that the gospel isn't merely an escape plan to get to heaven.
Right.
It is the reality of heaven invading earth right now. It states that society is not secular territory to be feared or avoided. It is a landscape of possibility.
I love that phrase, landscape of possibility.
And perhaps most provocatively, it declares that culture is not enemy ground. It is a mission field.
That completely flips the script. Hmm. If you view culture as enemy ground, your natural instinct is to build a fortress.
You lock the doors.
You lock the doors, hide inside with people who think exactly like you, and maybe throw rocks over the wall at the culture outside.
Right, the culture wars.
But if you view culture as a mission field and society as a possibility, your imagination is completely reshaped. You stop retreating.
You start to see business, education, government, the arts, media, and sports all as valid, vital areas for renewal. City changers do not retreat from culture. They actively engage and renew it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the framework applies this renewed vantage point directly to outcome number 8, vocation or work.
Yes, vocation.
To prove that work is not separate from worship, the source reaches all the way back to the very beginning of the scriptural narrative. Yeah. It points out a historical foundational note. The Garden of Eden was the first sanctuary.
It's a great observation.
Before there were altars or temples or choirs, there was a garden where physical labor was being done. Work and worship shared the exact same sacred meaning from the very start.
It is a profound historical connection that totally reframes Monday morning. Suddenly, the workplace is a sacred space.
Yes.
The classroom is an environment where worship is practiced. The boardroom, the office, the construction site, these aren't just places you go to grind out a paycheck so you can survive until the weekend.
Let's make this really concrete for the listener. Say someone listening right now is a software developer. How is writing code an act of worship?
That's a great question.
Or a plumber fixing a leak. How does that carry heaven into a city?
It comes down to the nature of the divine, which is to bring order out of chaos and to cultivate flourishing.
Okay.
When a software developer writes clean, honest, secure code so that the end user's data is protected and the next developer doesn't suffer trying to fix it.
That's love.
That is an act of integrity and neighborly love. When a plumber fixes a leak with excellence, charges a fair price, and treats the homeowner with dignity, they're literally bringing order to a chaotic, stressful situation.
They're restoring a home.
Exactly. That is sacred work.
When vocation becomes worship, mediocrity just disappears. You aren't just working for a boss anymore. You are working for a higher purpose. It is the ultimate bridge that connects Sunday's faith to Monday's life.
And all of this, the anchored identity, the abiding intimacy, the aligned integrity, the mercy, the calling, the mobilization, the new vantage point, and the reframed vocation.
All of it.
All of it culminates in the ninth and final outcome, victory.
But not victory in the usual sense.
No. In this context, victory is not defined as conquering an enemy or winning a culture war. It is defined as shalom.
Shalom. We hear that word a lot, and it usually just gets translated as peace. But the framework makes it very clear that shalom is so much more than just the absence of conflict.
Right.
A quiet room where two people are giving each other the silent treatment has an absence of conflict, but it certainly doesn't have shalom.
Definitely not.
Shalom means wholeness, restoration, and flourishing. It's an active, vibrant state of well-being.
Precisely. And city changers are essentially agents of this shalom. The framework outlines that they carry three specific things to address three specific conditions in the world.
Let's hear them.
First, they bring faith to address lostness, helping people understand their inclusion in this grand story of redemption.
Yeah.
Second, they bring love to address pain. Sitting in the mess with people, as we discussed earlier.
The incarnational piece.
Yes. And third, they bring hope to address systemic brokenness.
Systemic brokenness. That means going beyond just helping one person and looking at the structures of a city. Housing, education, justice. And bringing hope and solutions to those areas.
Exactly. This shalom touches everything. It transforms homes. It changes the atmosphere of workplaces. And it elevates entire neighborhoods. It turns a group of disparate individuals into a family on mission.
So what does this all mean when we step back and look at this entire journey from securing your inner identity all the way to deploying shalom into the systemic brokenness of a city? The ultimate takeaway for you, the listener, is that true discipleship has to break out of the building.
It has to.
It requires whole life formation. The source concludes with this incredibly powerful thought. When these nine concepts actually take root in a community, the church stops being just a weekly gathering. It transforms into a distributed force for mission.
A distributed force. It's a brilliant, almost tactical way to describe a group of people who have taken the core DNA of their faith and carried it out into the bloodstream of the city.
That's a great visual.
They aren't asking the city to come to them. They are infiltrating the city with wholeness.
So here is the challenge for you today. Take a hard look around your immediate surroundings. Look at your office, your neighborhood, your home, or even the coffee shop you frequent.
Think about where you are placed.
Ask yourself how you can act as an agent of shalom today, right where you are placed. How can you use your unique time, your specific talent, and your treasure to carry a little bit of heaven into that specific space?
This raises an important question, though, and it's something really worth pondering as you go about your day.
What's up?
The source heavily emphasizes erasing the sacred and secular divide. It insists on turning every boardroom, classroom, and construction site into a sacred environment for worship.
Right.
It wants to transform the congregation into that distributed force we just talked about. So, if a community truly achieves this level of whole life formation, and they actually achieve systemic shalom out in the world, does the concept of a physical, centralized church building eventually become completely obsolete?
Oh, wow.
If heaven is successfully carried out into the streets, does the entire city simply become the sanctuary?
If the whole city is the sanctuary, how does that change the way you walk down your street today? That is an incredible thought to leave on. We want to warmly thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you are leaving this conversation feeling empowered, genuinely curious, and ready to re-enter your day with a completely new vantage point on your own potential. Until next time, Keep diving deep.